This is Rick Reynolds of the Holiday Special Podcast here on the Throwback Network. And after an evening of watching holiday specials, I like to kick back, relax, and listen to a good movie review here on Throwback Reviews.
Welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about the American classic Bad News Bears from 1976. But before we get into that, let me go around and say hello to the guys. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, man. What's going on? It is winter here in Oklahoma. It just came in this week. Monday, I think we had a high of 72 on Monday. And then Tuesday, the high was 43. So it was like, hang up all the t-shirts, wow. Get out all the hoodies and the sweatshirts and all that. And the high for the rest of the week is like 32. So, man, it came in quick. And let's see, what else? Well, the back of our house is where the wind blows in. So the back of our house is always cold. So my wife says, hey, do you think we should move? Because there's like a front living room and then there's like a little back den, you know? So she says, do you think we should move to the front of the house? I said, that's fine. What I didn't realize I was agreeing to was the purchase of thousands of dollars of furniture. I didn't know that was what I had just said yes to. So, we're having furniture delivered tomorrow, and we went and picked up a do you know what a chase lounge is?
That's, yes. That's a chair you run after, I think.
They're going to chase me when I make the payments on this stupid
thing. Is it a chase or is it a chaise lounge?
I don't know. You know, what's funny is on, this is Oklahoma. So on Craigslist, I type in C-H-A-I-S-E and there's like six of them. And then I type chase like C-H-A-S-E and there's 200.
Come on down. We got a ton of.
Right. So sometimes you have to countrify, you know, every year, for years when I was a kid, my dad liked to go eat gyros, you know, like the sandwich, the gyro. And then we'd go to the gyro place. And then, of course, I go with this friend of mine and he's like, it's not a gyro. It's a gyro.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And so we go to the fair one year and I go up to the guy and it's like the guy's all sweaty. He's cutting the meat off the spindle. His sweat is rolling. It's the fair. It's in August or September. Mm-hmm. Sweat is rolling off his face down into the meat.
Into,
you know?
Your gyro.
Yes. Yeah. And I go up there and I'm like, I'd like to get a gyro. He goes, you mean a gyro? And so I'm like, I can't win. So it could be a chaise lounge, but around here it's a chase, and it's C-H-A-S-E, and I have one now. It's in my living room.
Come down to Chevy's and buy a chair.
My wife said, I'm going to do some stuff to the living room. I said, okay, I come down, and one of the walls today is blue.
Yeah,
congratulations.
It looks good, though. I saw a picture of it. It looks real good.
Yeah. So it goes with there's one big wall that's orange and one that's tan, and now there's a blue one. So it's like a new wave Rubik's Cube I live in or something. I don't know, guys. You know what? You just nod and you say, oh, it looks great, dear. I like my new chaise lounge. Tell me which wall I can put the TV on. That's all I care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Now you have new wall color. You have a new chaise lounge. You got something else new that just came out, don't you?
Hemorrhoids? Oh, no. You're rusted metal. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah,
it's the same thing.
They come from the same place. The bowels. The bowels of my bowels.
Makes you itch.
Zurb and I found out that we have a common love of 80s hard rock and heavy metal, and we both grew up listening to all these same bands. Woo! So we have started a new podcast called Rusted Metal, and it's all about... We're going to go alphabetically. So we just did our first show. We did, and actually what we decided, there's so many good bands that we were like, we can't just decide on like one that starts with the letter A. So we're going to do an episode that's a capital A, and then we're going to do a lowercase a. And then we're going to the B's. So we just did AC/DC was episode one. And then on episode two, we're going to do Anthrax. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to move on into the B's, and we're going to go right through the alphabet. So... I think some letters will be hard to pick just two bands, and some might be hard to come up with two.
Yeah. Letter X is going to be exciting. I can't wait.
Yeah, that's true. But hey, you know what? For Q, you got Queen and Queensryche.
Yes.
That makes it easy.
Very easy.
So
are you going to add that onto the network? We never even talked about that. I never asked you.
Yeah. I mean, it's retro. It's 80s metal and stuff. Is it on iTunes? You're putting it on iTunes. Is that right?
Yeah. It's submitted to iTunes. I've already gotten back an email, saying that Please Stand By is on iTunes, but Rusted Metal hasn't come back to me yet.
So yeah, once we get a feed, we'll put that on there. So,
Great.
Yep. So give us something to do this winter. While I'm sitting, I'm going to podcast from my new Chase Lounge. I'll be all fancy.
Well, Kevin, you just mentioned that Please Stand By is on iTunes. So why don't you explain what Please Stand By is?
Well, Please Stand By is like the opposite of hemorrhoids. And what it is
that's why I'm not on it.
It's a show. It's a show about nothing and everything all at once. It's a podcast that I used to do with my buddy Joe. And I found the perfect replacement for my buddy Joe because he's not computer literate to the point of ever touching Google or connecting at all. So I asked a very close friend of mine to do it.
A very young and handsome friend, right?
Well, no, but just a very close friend of mine. And it happens to be you.
Sean. It is.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So you're helping me.
We're just podcasting fools on this show.
Yeah, we are. And it's a show about everything and nothing. There's five simple things. There's anything exciting, heard any news, where you just cover news topics, seen any movies, have a little show and tell, and then you end with a song. And that's it. And just try to act as silly and goofy in between. And
yeah, it's a fun show. I had heard all the ones that you did with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I can step up to the challenge because those shows were really good. You had great chemistry going, but I will say that it was, even though I had listened to all the old back episodes, I was still kind of like, oh man, I don't know what to expect here. And I had such a good time doing it. And when you say like the five topics and you talk about news, It was definitely lighthearted. It's not like we're trying to be all serious, you know.
Never.
Today in the news.
Best.
It was a good time.
The best part about having you on is that you immediately picked up on the improv of it. You had no clue what I was doing in the beginning, and you followed suit very well. And those who haven't heard the show, just listen and you'll see what I'm talking about.
And you guys had a guest on the first show.
Oh, and we did have a guest on the first show.
What a surprise. Yeah.
A very, very close friend of Rob's that he met in the woods by a crick. If I
know. I had to turn it off. I got scared all over again.
He missed you. And apparently.
Well, I'll put a link for that as well in the show notes. I'm not sure if that's going to go on the Throwback Network. I mean, it is our network. I should just put it on, but we'll see if we can work a little bit of a little retro into it somehow.
Somehow maybe
throw it onto the network. But what else? You got anything else going on?
Yeah, really quick. I just want to tell you how much I love my oldest, Katrina Royce. She picked up tickets for Shelley and I to go see Jim Brewer this coming Saturday at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. So I'm beside myself to the point that I'm just like this. I'm going to see Jim Brewer.
That'll be a fun show.
That's just.
Oh yeah,
I
like him.
He's amazing, and if I was to stop and think that I'm going to see Jim Brewer, I would be giddy as a little girl. So I'm just trying to keep myself cool until the last second, and then when I get there, I'm going to be like, ah, hey,
You know, does he still have a podcast?
No, and I wish he would hurry up and get it because he's been working on it, then stopped and went back to Sirius Radio for a while and then right. stopped that. And now he's not doing anything and then I'm waiting. But
that was one of the first podcasts, one of the probably the first five podcasts I listened to. He's hilarious.
He is hilarious. And I wish he would hurry up and because he on his site, he's mentioned that he's been working on a podcast format, hopefully soon. So how are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing pretty good. This is like the podcast announcements here. I don't have a new show, but I did bring back OTR Playlist, which is my old-time radio podcast that I do. And I'm actually doing it with Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game My Game podcast. Everyone knows who Ferg is.
Yeah.
Super cool guy. He just kind of recently got into old-time radio, and I had not put on an episode since like last December. And he just said, hey, you know, if you want, I'll help you get it rebooted. And I said, that's great. Why don't we just do it together? And I mean, it's not very involved. We do a little introduction of what the show is going to be, the topic. And we just did Abbott and Costello. Mm-hmm. And so, but it's something I like and he likes now. So OTR Playlist, that is on the Throwback Network. And that's really about all the news I have. I mean, I think we're probably overloading, and that's probably the least important of the new podcast announcements that we have. But so today, though, we're going to be talking about the Bad News Bears, and I want to kind of dedicate this show to the Grant family, which was a family that lived across the street from me when I grew up in the city of Tonawanda on Adams Street. Brian and Sean Grant were the sons, and Tim and Chris were the parents. Really nice people. Mr. Grant was a coach, baseball coach for the boys club, had its own league. And my brother played for him a few years for the boys club. I'm not sure how many years he was a coach, but I know I had him as a coach.
Wow.
And he was just, he wasn't anything like the coaches in this movie. He wasn't serious. He was just, he was one of those neighborhood dads that was the cool dad. So it was a real nice family. And just to kind of tell, I guess get a little sidetracked, but I just actually ran into him this past summer. I got a bike. I run and I bike. And so the first time I went out on my bike, I go past my old house all the time and they were having a block sale and I rode by and I saw Mr. Grant, starting to bring stuff out and I rode by. I was like, oh, he's not going to remember me. And I ended up going to the end of the block and turning. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go back. You know, and I know that I was a complete pain in the ass for them probably as a kid, because like the Bad News Bears, there was a lot of, you know, scuffling and fighting going on in our street. I mean, I know I got into it with their sons a few times, you know, childhood crap. So I thought, you know what, let me go back. And he knew exactly who I was. Like, I thought I would have to explain like who I was and everything. And I just said, Mr. Grant, and he looked up, had a big, huge smile.
Sweet.
I was probably there for like 45 minutes. And I could have stayed longer just talking. So it was great to see them.
Beautiful.
This movie reminded me of them. We used to play a lot of wiffle ball and stuff like that. So and I've been talking with his son Sean and Brian a little bit on Facebook. So this is this goes out to the Grant family.
Cool.
Here, Grant.
So
family.
Why don't we go ahead and give our movie summary for anybody who hasn't seen it or possibly, like us, has not seen it in years.
Well, this is The Bad News Bears. It came out in 1976, and it is the story of a Morris Buttermaker, who is an ex-minor league baseball player, and he currently cleans pools for a living. And he is recruited by a local businessman to coach the Bears, which is a small ragtag team of misfits who I believe they are all the kids that didn't make it into the league. And so this guy actually sues the league and the league makes one extra team. So it's all the worst players. And this guy is paying Buttermaker under the table to be the coach. So at the beginning of the movie, Buttermaker is just in it for the money. He's cashing these checks. But pretty quickly, he regains his competitive spirit from before. And, you know, he starts kind of coaching the kids a little bit. And then he recruits a couple of better players for the team. One is Amanda, which is the daughter of his ex-girlfriend who he taught to pitch. So he brings her in as the pitcher. And then there's also a local punk named Kelly Leak, who hangs around the baseball field. Turns out he can hit a ball faster than he can ride his Harley Davidson around the baseball diamond. So I'm sure we'll talk about Kelly a little bit. But he brings these two in, and so the team starts winning, and they have some early luck. Some of the other teams have to forfeit. They don't have enough players, and the Bears just start doing better and better. And so eventually they get to the league championship game, where they have to face their rivals, the Yankees. And I'm not going to say what happens, but I'll give you a hint. The Bears lose. And the Yankees win the game, and the Bears
that's 50
almost
bucks to Sean. Then
exactly,
yeah. That's the way it's going to be. Sorry, man.
They almost
have to give 50 bucks.
Yeah, they almost pull off an upset, but doesn't quite work out. And I'm sure we'll talk about the ending, but I thought this was a good ending for the Bears, because it wouldn't, I don't think, for me, it wouldn't have felt genuine if they had come back and won everything, because they weren't necessarily those kids, you know. But anyway.
I completely agree.
Yeah, you know, I actually read that they filmed a different ending for this, where the Bears did win, and audiences didn't like it. They thought that there's no way the Bears would have beat the Yankees, you know. But
And it was a nice lead to the end, where you think that they're going to pull it out.
Sure, you know, it's a kid. Well, I don't know that it's a kid movie. It's a movie with kids in it. And so you think, oh, you know, I mean, that's what you're expecting, is for them to come back and win. But right. Anyway, but at the end they say, you know, we'll see you next year. We'll be in the league next year. So I guess that's where the movie ends. The Bad News Bears, the original, had a budget of $9 million, which was really surprising to me.
Wow.
No CGI.
What?
There's no special effects. There's nothing in this. I gotta think some of it, must have went to the salaries of some of the
actors.
Yeah, there was definitely some product placement in here we'll talk about. But the film did gross $43 million, and so anybody that listens to this podcast knows when you got a movie that has a four or five-time return, what does that mean?
Yeah, when they say see you next year, they mean we'll see you next year.
They mean we'll see you next year, and the year after that, and the year after that, and then on CBS television for an entire season. I did look up this movie on Rotten Tomatoes, and it has a 96% positive movie. So,
wow.
Or positive rating. So this is a pretty much loved by everyone movie.
Zurb, why don't you go ahead and just give us a quick rundown of some of the cast members? I mean, I know we can't cover all the ball players, but we can hit the the top hitters.
Well, we got Walter Matthau playing the main role of Coach Morris Buttermaker. Might know him from The Odd Couple and the Grumpy Old Men movies, which I love dearly.
Mm-hmm.
You had Tatum O'Neill in there playing Amanda Wurlitzer. And Tatum O'Neill didn't really do too much acting after her younger days. She went on to have a very rough late teenage life and kind of dropped out from the scenery. But Jodie Foster dropped out of the role to do Taxi Driver. And I'm kind of glad about that, because if Jodie Foster was in this movie, that would have made 900 movies that were in my childhood that Jodie Foster was in. Because she was in everything.
But you know what? I thought they were comparable. You know what I mean? Like, I thought they were similar. Like, I could see Jodie Foster in this role.
Definitely.
You know, the Freaky Friday, like, era Jodie Foster, you know. But Tatum O'Neill, man, I had a crush on her. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I'm watching this movie or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, she is crushable. That's for sure. And it seems like this was written for Jodie Foster, too. You know, it had that. Vic Morrow played Coach Roy Turner. Died on the set of the Twilight Zone movie. Can you explain that?
Oh, is he the one with the helicopter?
Yes, this is him. Yeah, this was him. Now, Vic Morrow is a famous actor. I mean, he's been in a ton of things. He was in a ton of television programs and movies.
Combat.
And, yeah, his IMDb thing is pages long or whatever. But as a kid, I never heard of his name. I mean, there wasn't anything that I was familiar with, but when I saw his name, I Googled his name, and that's what kept coming up. He was the guy. Remember, there was a guy, the actor, and two children that were killed, like a helicopter fell on them.
Yeah.
They were filming, and that was Vic Morrow. So that was his last appearance.
Wow.
See, I didn't even, I've seen that, you know, on YouTube. I'm sure most, a lot of people have seen it. But he seemed familiar to me, but I had, when I was looking on IMDb, I didn't notice anything that I'd ever seen him from. And I had not seen this movie since I was just a little kid. So he just got that familiarity to him, I guess. But I saw that he did that show Combat, the World War II drama series, and I will definitely be looking for that. That piqued my interest.
Wow. Well, poor guy. I didn't know that. I always confused that with the Poltergeist kid. I always get the stories mixed up like that. And I thought that I always confuse those two up. But talk about break a leg in a movie.
You know, and everything else.
Catch a helicopter. Jackie Earl Haley played Kelly Leak. Even as a kid, he looked like Freddy. You know, he was the perfect role for that. He was Freddy in 2010 for Nightmare on Elm Street. And he was the director as well. And,
He's kind of got, what's Ron Howard's brother's name?
Oh.
Who always played
Phil?
Oh. He always has a lot of,
I really don't
like
know.
Like, you don't know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I know who you're talking about. He's kind of balding.
He was in American
Graffiti.
Yeah,
he's real goofy looking. And these two kind of remind me of each other.
That guy, yeah. Russ. We'll call him Russ.
Sure. Someone's yelling at it at their iPod right now.
He, you know what? He has that, and it's not him, but he has that Disney kid air about him. You know what I mean? Like, you could just see him in all these different kid type roles, but I guess he wasn't in that much, but I thought he was in more things. I think I have him confused for somebody else, maybe that was a Disney actor or something.
Could have been.
And it's Clint Howard.
Clint. That's who that's what I was trying to say.
His middle name is Russ.
That's right. Clint Russ Howard. Brett Marcus played Jimmy Feldman, who and first I'll let Sean explain something about Brett Marcus, which we were discussing earlier.
Actually, Rob was the one that discovered that.
Oh, excuse me, Rob.
I just thought he looked like somebody.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when we first started doing this podcast, when Sean brought me on this podcast, he was like, hey, you know, if you have any movies you want to do from the 80s, and I was like, yep, we're going to do Thrashing. And he was like, what? And I'm like, oh, it's the greatest skateboard movie of all time. We will be doing Thrashing. And so the comic relief in Thrashing is a guy named Bose, if you remember, if you listen to that podcast. And this is the same actor, Jimmy Feldman. Brett Marcus is his real name. He was Jimmy Feldman in the Bad News Bears, and then he was Bose in Thrashing. But so when Sean looked at the picture of Brett Marcus, he was like, guy, he almost looks like one of the Marx brothers.
Harpo.
And he looks like Harpo Marx. I mean, he's got the same kind of curly hair and the facial features, the nose and the lips. But anyway, I looked up Brett Marcus, and it turns out he is the grandson of Harpo Marx. So
that is amazing.
I thought you said...
Gummo. I'm sorry. Gummo. Yeah.
Which he does resemble the eyes. You can see it in the eyes, mm-hmm. but the hair, because you'll see in this movie, I mean, he's the kid. There's a few kids with long blonde hair, but his is real curly.
Right, right.
So he totally reminded me of Harpo.
Man. And then there's 50 other random kids in the movie.
There's kids everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, so guys, Rob, did you see this in the theaters? I mean, 76, you would have been, what, 3 years old? So
yeah, I did not see it in the theaters, but this was a regular rotation HBO movie. I lived in a neighborhood with a lot of sports kids. The people across the street, there were four brothers, and then next door there were three brothers. So there was always a sports type game, you know, either football game going on, baseball game, something was always going on. And so I think this, I don't know if that's why this movie stuck with me, but I definitely saw this a bunch as a kid, which now, I didn't remember a lot of the details. So I remember this as being more kid friendly. And I'm sure if you're younger, you wouldn't pick up on a lot of the more adult things, you know, that are in this movie. But yeah, so I'm sure I watched it dozens of times as a kid.
Hmm. Yeah, and I was the same way. Again, HBO. We should be getting some kind of kickback from HBO. I mean, like, plug them.
I can't even afford to have it now.
Yeah, right. But I haven't seen it since I was a young kid. And, you know, we have this conversation, and I was just talking to somebody else today at work that, you know, there's these movies that I know I saw as a young kid, probably younger than my oldest Ethan right now, who's 12. Excuse me. And I wouldn't want him watching. I don't know. It's tough. It's like we're those new parents, you know, that new line of parents where we're like so overprotective or something. But I guess it's more the uncomfortableness of, you know, when the one blonde kid that I could totally relate to that's always mouthing off and getting
fights and everything. Tanner.
Yeah, he just starts spewing off stuff that I don't know if I really want to.
There's that one scene, right, where he's talking about all the
cultures,
ethnicities of everybody that make up the team, and he doesn't pull any punches.
Not one. I think why is because in 1976, political correctness didn't exist yet. And on top of that, we back then in like 1976, there wasn't as much knowledge of all the different types of cultures and the types of different people. And I can't say there wasn't respect for them, but at the same time, there wasn't that much respect for them. I'm just going to go that route. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, we're a lot more respectful of other people and their cultures and who they are. And it's become to the point where we've gotten so comfortable being respectful that the thought of those types of words really chafe you fast, you know?
Well, and you know, this is what I thought about this. I mean, there are movies that we've watched on this show that I would not want my kids to watch. And this is what I thought about Bad News Bears. I wouldn't mind my kids watching it. I just don't want to be in the room. there's a few awkward things and I think they know enough now to not, you know, I tell them all the time, like we'll watch some movie and maybe my wife's gone or something. I'm like, listen, you can hear these words and that's fine. You repeat them and you're in trouble with your mother and I am in trouble with your mother.
Yeah, right.
And we're not going to get to watch movies anymore. So right. Don't repeat them, you know. So they already know that there's words that they hear that they shouldn't be saying, you know. So, you know, I it's not stuff that I want them to repeat, but to hear it, you know.
Yeah. My youngest two, I don't think I definitely wouldn't let him watch it, but my oldest, I mean, I guess I'm not giving him enough credit. He knows he's not going to go repeating stuff. And right. I mean, I could watch this with Ethan. I mean, cause it is a funny movie. Like you said, is it a kid's movie? I don't think it's really a kid's movie, but, I think at a certain age.
Well, there's a few. Well, you know what? First, I want to hear if Zerb saw this before I get into too much more.
The first time that I saw this was today about 5 p.m.
Oh.
It's the first time I've seen this movie. And real quick before you go on, HBO is about to start a Netflix type of service.
Where, a streaming thing. I heard that.
So we can all have HBO pretty soon again.
All right.
Sean, I wonder if that means HBO Go is going to be gone.
Yeah. I don't know. Sean, you got to throw some stuff out there for us. Get us some free HBO.
Yeah, I'll get right on top of that.
Give him a call.
So what I was going to say is this movie was rated PG.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, if you've got a movie where a coach is driving around in a convertible with a beer cooler in the back, he's constantly drinking beer and then later giving the children beer, I don't think you get a PG rating for that anymore. Or they make you pull it out, one or the other. Don't you think?
Well, is PG still, lack of better words, is it worse than PG-13 or is PG-13 above?
No, PG-13 is above. So maybe you get a PG-13 out of it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see this being a PG-13 now.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, because you got the Budweiser. And he's also dumping Jim Beam in there. Don't forget. Just to flavor it up a little bit.
Zerb, were you a ball player growing up?
No, I wasn't a ball player. I dated a lot of chicks. No, I played soccer when I was a kid. And that's all I did. But ball. It was soccer for me. I played soccer quite a bit. And I wanted to play baseball, but where I grew up, that wasn't the thing. Everybody went out for soccer for some strange reason.
Yeah. I did the soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the Grants were huge soccer fans, and we played a lot. I didn't play a lot of organized, like I didn't play baseball for my high school. I didn't even play for the little league. The boys club was its own league,
mm-hmm.
Which I actually had to check with his son Sean. I wasn't quite sure. I didn't think it was the same as the town's little league, but I played soccer a few years, but I never played like little league football or on the football team. But the block that I grew up on, the street, we had a lot of kids, and we had an area. Excuse me. I kind of talked about it, I think, on our Forts episode. It was like we called it the back alley. It wasn't like you know, with dumpsters in a movie in the city. It was just basically our backyard, and then the houses behind us, their backyards. There was a plot of land in between. They didn't butt up right to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we would play football. We'd play, like I said, we'd play wiffle ball, sometimes in the street, sometimes out there. We'd play soccer. We just play all sorts of things. So we were constantly playing sports growing up. I just didn't get super involved in, you know, in organizations and stuff like that.
You didn't wear uniforms and all of that?
No.
No?
I'm sure I had a Yankee shirt and stuff like that, but.
I did wear uniforms. I used to play rugby a lot with my friends down at the end of the street. And tried to play football, but I wasn't any good at that. I really wasn't. Rob, did you play?
For organized stuff, I played soccer for a couple of years. I mean, like third and fourth grades. I mean, I played soccer, the type of soccer where you're just kids and you run up and down, and then you get orange slices, and then you run up and down, and then you congratulate
the
other kids.
There's always orange slices.
Right.
Free Gatorade.
Right. You want to know a funny story? Is my wife, who went to the same high school, we grew up in the same town, played soccer the same years I played soccer, like in grade school, third, fourth grade. And when we moved in together, I brought all my stuff. She brought all her stuff, and I had pulled out my soccer trophy. And she, one day she's like, "Oh, I found my soccer trophy." I'm like,
"That's more.
What do you mean your soccer trophy?" She's like, "Oh, this is when I played. I was a kid." I was like, "You didn't win? Like, we smeared everybody. That's my soccer." And she, to this day, she thinks that's her soccer trophy.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's
and
like
you will never win that argument.
You know what it says? 1983 Pee-wee Championships. That's what league we were in.
And if I may, I have to say that is the first time I've heard the word smeared since 1970-something. Oh. That was great.
Oh, we were awesome. Yeah, but no, I did soccer for a couple of years, and then I got into karate, and I did karate for like 10 years almost.
Oh my God.
But so yeah, but I wasn't good at the team thing. You know yeah. what I mean? Like I wanted to win on my own or lose on my own, do whatever, but I didn't want to, and not because what I would like to say is because I didn't want other kids dragging my team down, but really it's because I didn't want to be the guy that made the team lose.
Right.
So it was a lot easier if I just did it by myself, you know?
So I guess it's safe to say that none of us had to deal with coaches like these guys. I mean, Walter Matthau's character, Buttermaker, he didn't take it serious. Like you said, this was for the money. He was getting paid. He was cleaning pools. He's a pool cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing this for some extra cash, drinking while he's there, and really just does not give a shit about these kids, about the team. But then the other coach is very serious. All the coaches are, because that's funny when they have like their kind of dinner or banquet. And the the one lady who keeps popping up, and I believe she's a coach of a team, and she's like, "Oh yeah, we're all friendly now, but once it starts, we're."
I think she's like in charge of the league or something. Like she does something with the league because she mentioned something about, you know, she gives him his the handbook and says like you need to know these rules or something. Yeah. Is that you're talking the lady?
And she pops up. She pops up throughout the movie at games.
And you know what? I didn't, as a kid, I didn't have to deal with coaches like this, but my son has played basketball for the YMCA for the last 2 or 3 years now. My daughter's played, and also Mason played soccer for a while. And I have dealt with these coaches, fortunately, it's never been my kid's team. It's always usually like a team we're playing. But I remember when Mason was – I don't know, six or seven. He went to a soccer game and the other coach was out there yelling, and the other coach was wearing a shirt that said, "Football is everything." That's exactly what it said. And I was like, wow, because everything is a lot. You know what I mean? Like, that covers a lot of stuff. And I was just so, I mean, and he was yelling at people, you know, and I mean, like, you know, at that age of soccer, there's only one play, and it's there's the ball, and there's nine kids standing around it kicking each other in the shins. And then eventually somebody hits the ball and it shoots out, and then it's like they're all connected at the shoulder, and they all look like Sigmund the Sea Monster. they go. They're all connected, and then they go somewhere else, and they all sit there and try to kick the ball or whatever. You know, there's no actual plan. There's no, like, you go this way, I'll go this way. Mm-hmm. And so to see somebody just stand out there just yelling and losing their mind, and I was like, oh my God. And I've run into it in basketball with other coaches and stuff, and the coaches are bad. Sometimes the parents are worse. I mean, you hear the parents in the stands, you know, talking about not only their kid, but talking about other people's kids or whatever. And I just shake my head, you know. Yeah. I am very competitive type person, but not for my kids. You know what I mean? Like, I want them to do their best, but if they lose or they win, whatever, we're going to go get ice cream either way.
You don't live.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You don't live through your kids.
Oh, but man, there's definitely some parents in the thing that, I mean, I've seen people get up and walk out. I've seen people, you know, hit the wall before. Just, it's, yeah. And this is, you know, 10 and 11 year old basketball.
Well, they're placing bets and losing.
Maybe.
Well, we don't see a lot of that in this movie. It's mostly just the coaches that are, I mean, we do get the guy who has paid Buttermaker to coach these kids. Mm-hmm. He starts, you know, you think that it's to get these kids to be able to interact and be part of the league. And he really is serious about this. At a certain point, he's telling him not to play certain players, and he's getting kind of ticked off. But you don't really do have some of the parents.
Go ahead, Sean.
What's that? No, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, you even have Buttermaker get caught up in it. You know, I mean, he starts telling Kelly Leak, you know, if the ball's anywhere near you, you make the play. I mean, he's running in front of other kids because he just gets so caught up in that competitive spirit.
Yeah, and I think at first it's his own competitiveness with the other coaches and the other teams and watching them. Just, it's not that he's feeling bad for these kids, that he wants them to become better ball players or to try, you know, practice more for them. It's for him because he was like a big minor leaguer. He wasn't a major leaguer, but he was a big deal for the minor leagues. Correct. I mean, everyone kind of knew that that's what his position was.
Yeah. Right. He used to have a history.
Right. So,
and you, and you see these people, you know what I mean? You see those people that they didn't do good or whatever. They weren't successful. And now they've come back with their kids and they're going to relive that. And I mean, this movie is actually much deeper than I gave it credit for going into it.
And it was accurate, very accurate with the way the kids and the parents and the coaches, you know, react even today.
Yeah, and the kids with themselves on the team, I mean, you had just turmoil amongst them, not even to mention when they would get against the other teams. I mean, you've got a black kid on the team, you've got two Hispanic kids that don't, I think, speak English. Right. You've got the wise-ass little blonde-haired kid who wants to fight everybody. They're all kind of going at each other.
That's
a great line in the movie.
Right.
And they have no self-confidence. They have no self-confidence in the beginning of the movie, and that later on starts to come out slowly, even towards the end of the film with Lupus, the kid who's constantly being kind of picked on, eats his own boogers. He's very small and petite and just really quiet.
But does that booger-eating spaz make me want to puke?
You know, when I played soccer, we had this kid on our team. And he was just like Lupus. And so when I was watching this, I thought, because, you know, it's easy, especially when you think back, you remember kids that you weren't close to. You remember them with like one or two main characteristics. You know what I mean? Like, you don't think about everything they did in their life. You're just like, oh, that was the kid that ate boogers, or that was the kid that always fought, or whatever, you know. But we had a kid on our soccer team that was just like that, like never learned to wipe his nose. And he would sit and like draw in the dirt with a stick during the game. That's what I remember most about that kid. And I'm sure this guy has grown up, and I'm sure he's a nice person and has a regular, I'm sure he does not still eat his own boogers and draw in the dirt, but that's what I remembered, you know, of him during that time. And so I, a lot of these kids, I was like, oh, that reminds me of so-and-so, or that, you know, because they had more personality than just, you know, background kids. I mean, you do kind of, each one of them has their own little quirks. And there's a couple of them that fall into the background. And one of the problems I had early on was there's like three or four of them that all look almost identical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I honestly don't remember any of their names other than Lupus. That's mm-hmm. it. And the smart ass kid, that's his name to me. This, you know, him. I don't remember the black kid's name. And he was really down on himself to where he takes off his clothes at one point and just is like, he's not worthy of wearing a uniform.
Climbs up in the tree.
Yeah. And Buttermaker's got to climb up in a tree and kind of, I guess, I don't know, was he feeding him a line of BS or whatever to make him feel better about himself, you know, comparing him to a pro.
You know, I have had times before, like when my kids come home from school, my daughter came home from school one time, and it's amazing at what age little girls start being mean to each other. I mean, my daughter's in fourth grade, and they are already little catty girls, you know what I mean?
Oh, boy.
But last year, she came home one day, and she was all upset, and she was like, somebody said something about what I was wearing and blah, 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 and my wife wasn't home, and so we're sitting there on the couch, and I was like, oh, shit. This is the part of being an adult where I'm supposed to have a speech for this. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, like, and then you're like, well, you know, sometimes kids and their insecurities, and it's just like this babble coming out of your mouth. You're like, God, I hope this helps her get through tomorrow or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I saw that a few times in this movie, and I really liked it because Buttermaker is not as far as, I mean, he's not a mature adult. You know, he's a guy, he's a has-been, and he cleans pools. I mean, I'm not knocking pool cleaners or whatever, but I mean, his plan for life did not pan out. You know?
Right.
And so now, I mean, I don't know that he has these tools to build these kids up. And for a long time, he's just interested in, you know, redeeming his own, you know, he's kind of doing this for his own glory a little bit, but,
well, he doesn't seem to be a person that can handle a relationship anyways, as we see, with the, girl, gosh, I don't remember. Amanda's mother, which, we never see her in the film, correct? The mother?
That's right. And I remember wishing I could, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to see the mother?
Well, yeah, I wanted to see what her mom looked like, you know. She had to be blonde.
Well, at the end, you know, she's like, my mom's coming to the game and blah, blah, blah. And I've set it all up, you know. And that was a tough, there's a couple of emotionally tough scenes in this movie that I had just glanced over as a kid maybe or whatever, but that's one where, you know, she, you know, as a 11-year-old girl basically sees this as they're getting back together, and it's through the baseball, you know, and she's setting a date back up with her mom and him, and he goes off on her. That scene was rough.
Yeah, he's trying to push her away. You can obviously tell he hasn't seen her, because before that, before she even comes onto the team, when he tries to recruit her, basically, you know, she's selling maps to the, you know, Stars homes or something like that, and she references that she hasn't seen him in 3 years, but he obviously had some sort of impact on her childhood prior to that 3 years of not seeing him. So, but I really did like the fact that we didn't see the mother. We didn't, I don't think we needed that added to the story, to the plot. The plot was him of Buttermaker evolving back into a normal, compassionate adult human being. And then these kids who had no self-confidence, had all the inner conflict, starting to come into their own as far as having some confidence and sticking together. And then the relationship between Buttermaker and all the kids, because he does treat them like crap. You know, he's yelling at them all the time, which he does kind of, he loses his cool basically at one point. I mean, he has kids going out there purposely getting themselves beamed so they can get walked, you know, and then yelling at the kid because he won't do it again. And he takes a swing. And then he finally, after he screams at him in the dugout, realizes like crap.
Well, he like throws him. I mean, he throws him,
and then he starts yelling at all of them. And that's when he kind of just pauses and just, I think, realizes, like,
yeah, it's definitely
what am I doing here? This isn't about me,
right?
It's but about them. That's what it was. It was all about him. To that point, he was using these kids for his own, you know, self worth, I guess, or whatever. At that point, to make himself feel better.
I would have felt better if she showed up at the end, right before all the old players went back into the cornfield. If she showed up and
walked out. Never seen it, pal.
And nope. What is that, a different movie?
That's the McCoy cast, also found on throwbacknetwork.net.
Oh, Field of Dreams. I'm sorry. No, they should have had her come at the very end, not even say a word, just have her standing there watching the game and Walter Matthau.
Why?
Turns.
Why do you?
I agree. Because it's like the redemption of his character. Like basically, he blew this relationship before.
No, but this is his second chance, jerk. Sean.
Right.
I totally disagree. It's not what this movie wasn't. I don't think about him rekindling his relationship with her mother. It was him just. Getting out of the slump of looking at himself in the mirror and being, I'm a pool cleaner every day. That's all I do is I clean pool. Like, no, he is, you know, someone that these kids can look up to. I don't know.
Wouldn't you sleep better at night knowing that she was going to be there in his future and you knew what she looked like? Because this woman could be like, you know, oof, you know, she could be one of those you wake up and you go, oh my God. What have I gotten myself into? And we have no clue.
Right. And then take her out later and clean her pool, if you know what I'm saying. A pool cleaning joke. What was the other scene that bothered me?
Why do I feel like I need to get the last word on this? you guys are wrong.
We'll get her on the show. We'll get the mother on the show.
Who was supposed to play the mom?
This is when we need feedback. I want to know, are you glad that we didn't meet the mother?
Did you want to see the mother or did you want to? This is what I thought.
Do you think it would have been better added to the movie if we would have met the mother and had to deal with that little side plot going on or the way it is now? So,
and who would she
just leave a yes or no?
And which star would you pick from the 70s to play?
Sure, you could cast somebody to play it. Mm-hmm. Suzanne Summers as Mrs. Wurlitzer.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Lonnie Anderson playing.
The other scene is where you have Coach Turner, who is the coach of the Yankees, and he's super competitive and he's super aggressive. He's a win at all costs type of game. I'm sure somewhere in his closet he has a shirt that says football is everything. And he is his son the pitcher? That's his son.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, so they've got who's the fat kid on the Bears? I can't even.
Oh, the catcher? Now. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't think of his name now. But anyway, he's a good hitter. And so the coach comes out and he's like, listen, you got to just throw balls at this kid. I mean, not try to hit him, but like throw him low and outside. He says, yeah, he wants to walk him so he doesn't bring in a runner. And the kid basically throws and the kid and this catcher and the pitcher have had a thing throughout the game. I mean, the batter, you know, he keeps giving the pitcher the middle finger. We see that, and they've exchanged words. So anyway, he throws a pitch, and it almost hits this kid. And so the the dad of the pitcher comes out. He walks out on the mound, and he's like, "You tried to hit that kid on purpose." He's like, "No, I didn't." And then he smacks the kid. I mean, knocks him down.
Yeah.
And it's like a minute maybe of silence in the movie, and I'm just, as a parent, I mean, you're just horrified at this scene. I'm like, and you could see, And there's something that happens afterwards that I think is even more telling, but you could see that, I mean, this guy has lost not just control, he has lost the big picture. I mean, the big picture for him is winning, and it's not, you know, that this is, that that's his son or that they're playing, and that he walks back, and of course the, and we'll talk in a minute here, but basically, his son, you know, sabotages the next play of the game, but, the coach goes back over to the dugout, and then that lady that Sean was talking about that's involved with the league or whatever, she comes out, and then she immediately congratulates them that they're going to win the game or whatever, and they start talking about the game, and it's that almost sickening thing of they just gloss over that. They move on because they're talking about the game, the championship. They're not talking about what just happened, you know, whereas the kid's mother is, you know, horrified.
Right.
She should be.
Yeah, you're right, and everybody was. All the other kids were, because you could see.
Oh yeah,
the kid that was at bat was, you know, at first, you know, he almost gets beaned in the head, and he's like, "What the heck?" But that was like something he wanted. They would like to kind of hash out amongst themselves. But when his father came out and smacked him, everybody was taken aback, and including that kid.
And they did,
like, that was totally uncalled for.
They did a great job when he turned around, too. And you could tell when he accepted himself that he just really screwed up, that look on his face.
The dad?
Yeah. When he turned around and saw that everybody was looking at him.
I think he was more, he was, not that he screwed up in the sense that he just smacked his kid, but in the fact that he just smacked his kid in front of everybody.
Right. Well, that's,
you know,
true.
I don't, because he got right back into the game. It took him a few seconds. I mean, he got back into it. But we even see, you know, one of the quotes, that the only one I really put down in the for the movie that I thought was great, was showing his true character when he said before the game, he said, "Look, I'm not going to talk about winning. I'm going to talk about losing.
Yeah,
you got basically, you guys lose. You guys all have to live with the fact that you lost." And it's like, come on.
Not how you played the game or anything else, right?
How about not trying to be all correct and everything, but not win or lose. Let's just go out there and give it everything we got. Mm-hmm. You know, let's go get these guys or whatever. I'm not saying you got to be like, you know, do your best, and you know, you're still number one in my book. It doesn't have to be like that, but you could tell the guy, again, just different than Buttermaker, but kind of the same thing. It was more about him having this winning team.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we see this, there's a scene where a couple of the Bears, the Tanner, the kid that likes to fight, and Lupus are sitting there, and Tanner is picking on Lupus. He's like, you know, "You make me sick, get away from me," or whatever. But then two of the Yankees come over and start picking on Lupus, and then Tanner tries to fight them both, you know, and it's that thing where I could pick on you because you're on my team, but if you mess with my guys, and that kind of showed me, and just made me remember that kids have a way of dealing with each other. You know, they don't always need, I mean, when there's kids on the playground and somebody pushes somebody or they take the toy or whatever, mommy and daddy don't always have to run over there and interrupt things. You know what I mean? The kids have a way of dealing out their own little social justice and making sure who's fair and what the rules are, you know? And, so that thing of almost hitting, Engelberg, the batter's name. Yeah. The little fat kid. And, you know, I mean, they would have dealt with that at school the next day. Or on the, you know, on the playground or whatever, you know. I mean, the kids would have handled that. They didn't need the dad to come out there.
They would have handled it on the field like they did when she got spiked.
Clear the benches.
Yeah, when he says, "You spiked my player," when he was sliding into home and she was clearly going to tag him out, and he just put his foot up and kicked her in the chest.
Yeah.
And the whole both benches just cleared. And was it Tanner? Is that his name?
The little fighting kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets pissed off at what's his name? Kelly? Yeah. Because he comes and helps him out. And he's like, I didn't need your help. I could have taken them all on. I just love that kid.
I know. And he reminds a little scrapper, you know?
Yeah. He just, he reminds me of my littlest one, which is scary because he's my wife said it the best the other day. She's like, he's a hit first, ask questions later, which is not, is not good. And that's exactly, that's why I probably like this kid's character. That's kind of how I was as a kid.
Yeah.
Not anymore, but as a kid, I was the same way.
Just start swinging.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about the end of the movie. We talked that the Bears don't win. And honestly, I couldn't see this ending any other way. I mean, you're expecting that Hollywood ending, you know, Kelly is the best batter, you know. And by the way, before I talk about that, I don't know that much about Little League baseball and all this, but can you just recruit kids that happen to hang out there? You can just ask people to be on your team. And this kid rides a motorcycle to the park every day. And then finally he's like, hey, all right, just, you know, I guess just be it. They get him a uniform. And so he's on the team and he goes and gets his daughter, you know, I don't know. It just kind of seemed weird.
Because he throws a ball to him, right?
Throws the ball.
They crack
really
a ball over the fence and then he throws it back and they're just like, whoa. Right. And then and the kids all know that he's like the best player around or the best kid at sports.
Right, right. But so anyway, obviously you think, you know, at the end of the game, he hits this ball way out into the outfield and they're running around and you think, you know, that that's going to be the game tying run. And then all of a sudden he gets thrown out and it's over, you know. And I have gone to basketball games with my son, you know, and there was one game in particular. I'm used to watching like professional basketball where the score is like 120 to 100 whatever, you know, and in my kids league, I mean, it's not uncommon to have games that are like 20 to 15 or something, especially when they're little, like half the kids can't even throw the ball high enough to make it in the rim, you know? And I remember there was one game and our team was down by 1 point. And Mason comes around and they do this thing where they clap, like when nobody's around them. So they run around and they're like, throw it to me. Hey, like to get the attention, you know, and the clock's winded down. It's like 5, 4, 3. And so, and the other kid, he passes it to Mason. Our team's down by one. He throws up the game winning shot. And it doesn't even hit the backboard. I mean, it's so far off. I mean, it's not even an air ball. It's a rock. And, you know, it's just that thing where if you were writing your life story, that would have went in. You would have saved the day and, you know, and you would have made the game winning, but it didn't happen that way, you know?
Yeah.
And then afterwards all the kids were like, wow, you lost the game, jerk. And then then Mason was crying and then we went and got ice cream. And then I smacked him. I'm like, why did you do that? And I slapped him and knocked him down.
Did you pour your beer on him at the same time?
I did. I was man. Jerk. But, you know, so I what I liked about it was that was the reality in the movie for me, you know, where it wasn't the cheesy Hollywood ending where he knocks it out of the park and yay, the Bears won. And somehow in however many weeks, you know, the worst players of the league make a comeback. It wasn't like that. It was probably more realistic this way. Anyway, that was my take.
Same here. I like that too, that they didn't win at the end of it. Just the same, like you and Sean said, it gave you that, you know, if you fall down, you pick yourself up and try again next time.
Yeah, and they do the next year, right?
They do many times. We'll talk about that coming up here in the multiple sequels.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about the music a little bit? Because the three of us had a little discussion today about that as well. I know I searched out. Well, Rob, you questioned why it was all classical music. I questioned why I couldn't find a soundtrack for it because I like classical music and I think to be quite honest, maybe this might have been the movie that kind of set me to have an ear for it, you know, where I appreciate it.
Wow.
I really think so because there's such well-known songs in here. But Zurb, you're our music guy. So what did you find out about the music?
In what you're talking about right now, I can tell you that the reason that classical music was picked for this particular movie was because of the love of classical music by Walter Matthau. He was a huge classical music aficionado. And it also, of course, added the humor and suspense to each of the games that were played in the film. But most of the music was taken from the from George Bizet's opera Carmen, and that's where most of that music comes from. And there's a couple of classical pieces in there that I don't remember the names of, no matter how hard I try to remember or find them, because they don't have lyrics, and that's what makes it hard. But it's the person who did the music for the movie was Jerry Felding, born Joshua Itzhak Feldman, and he was born in 1922. He passed away in 1980 from a heart attack at age 57. And he was sick most of his life, the poor guy, and most of his ailments were not diagnosed. So he was sick. He was going to, he was offered a scholarship at Carnegie Institute for Instrumentalists. And after a short attendance, he had to go home and was bedridden for 2 years. And, but while he was at bedridden, he listened to the radio and became a big fan of Bernard Herrmann's music for the Orson Welles radio dramas, which got him into that type of mood music for whatever type of emotion you might have in a movie.
Right.
And he did a lot of work. You know, when he was healthy, he was in American radio. He did recordings for records, film, television. He was a composer, a conductor, a band leader, and a musical director on top of that. And in television, he's done work for You Bet Your Life in 1950 with, and here's a connection with this movie too, Groucho Marx. You Bet Your Life was the host, right?
Oh, okay.
And
can I just interject here for one second? If you're not familiar with You Bet Your Life from Groucho Marx, you can go to OTR playlist and find an episode on it.
Yes, please.
I did an old time radio episode on that.
And me personally, I'm going to be downloading that. I got to download that one too because
you know what? Can I interject for a second?
Surely.
We have the best retro network.
You do.
We have the best shows. I'm just saying.
If you need to find something retro, it's your one-stop shop.
One-stop shop.
He did the Jerry Felding show in 1952, so he had his own he had his own show in 1952. He was the musician for The Life of Riley. And then in 1962, Tell It to Groucho. So he was pretty close with Groucho Marx for quite a while.
Interesting.
And The Life of Riley also.
Yep.
An episode on OTR playlist. throwbackreviews.com/OTR playlist.
What can the guy not do?
Right. So there was, so there's no like record for this or
for, oh, like, the no, actual I could soundtrack, not find a soundtrack for this movie whatsoever. Yeah. I could make you one,
but well, I could too, but you know, just to be done the same way that it's in the film, you know, it's always has a little bit of a different sound to it.
Well, he made adaptations of the classical songs. In other words, he rewrote and arranged the way that he wanted those classical songs to go with the way that they were playing in the games, which is really cool, I thought. And he's done a ton of movies. He was very close with, Clint Eastwood too, because he did Outlaw Josie Wales, The Enforcer, Escape from Alcatraz.
Interesting.
He did all the music for that too.
And that's a shame that there's not a soundtrack for this because I, you know, like you guys said it, you do, anytime that there's classical music, I mean, and honestly, everything I know about classical music came from watching Woody Woodpecker, so I'm not a classical music aficionado, you know, but, you know, whenever they do that where they lay it in and it fits perfectly with the action and stuff, I always do enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a bummer. That's a bummer. But now we know because we were all kind of talking about it this morning. I was looking since last night and I was at work trying to Google it up for a little bit here and there. And so thanks for digging out that information.
Sure. Yeah, that's cool.
So we have some sequels, as we mentioned earlier in the show. How many sequels?
Did
we have, Rob?
Well, first of all, let me talk about how many sequels we have that have Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neill in it, which is zero. They don't come back for any of the following the movies. So what we have two official sequels, which is The Bad News Bears in Breaking Training, which came out the following year in 1977, and The Bad News Bears Go to Japan, which was in 1978. I have seen both of those movies. And The Bad News Bears and Breaking Training isn't terrible, but there's no Walter Matthau. There's no Tatum O'Neill. Basically what it's about is, the Bad News Bears, they go off to go play an exhibition game, and they go to, I want to say it's Minneapolis or somewhere like that, Minnesota, but it's, Kelly Leak, basically gets, reconnected with his estranged father. So it's all of a sudden it moves to him being the main character, you know, because they lose that relationship if there's no Tatum O'Neill and no Amanda, no Buttermaker. So then his dad becomes the coach. And so he teaches, you know, the boys or whatever. But it still has some of the same humor and stuff. So it's not bad. Then there's The Bad News Bears Go to Japan in 78. And that movie is terrible. I mean, it's not funny. It's not anything. Yeah, it's just really bad.
They shouldn't have bothered.
No. In fact, a lot of the kids, well, most of the kids came back for the first sequel. The one that didn't, or one big one that didn't, was Engelberg, because I read that he grew up, you know, he got like, grew like 4 inches and he lost a lot of weight. So he didn't look like he did, you know, in the original movie. So basically, they had to get somebody that was a little short fat kid that looked like he did in the first one. So you had those. The Japan one is terrible. It's panned by everybody. But that led into a television series. So mm-hmm. There was a television series. There's 26 episodes, I think, of that.
Never saw that.
Was on TV. No, and well, lucky you, because it's just really not very good. And then we have the 2005 remake, and that was with Billy Bob Thornton in the role of mm-hmm. Buttermaker. And they changed a little bit of the details. You know how they do with these remakes. It's instead of cleaning pools, I forgot what he does. He does something else now. And I read that they would not let him... even though the new one is PG-13 and the original was PG, they would not let him drink beer in the dugout. That's one of the things that they made them cut out in the new one.
Really?
Yep. So,
I missed all of this. I didn't even know they made remakes. I didn't even know that the first movie was made.
I knew there was a remake. I remember the movie when it came out.
And I had
absolutely no interest in it.
It has been, said that this may have been the movie that killed Billy Bob Thornton's career.
Really?
So, yeah, it's really just, I mean, I would say watch the original, maybe watch the sequel if you want, but...
I thought it was Angelina Jolie that killed his
career. Well, I think, yeah, Billy Bob Thornton killed his career, but if you want to pick this movie up or any of these, I found DVD copies starting at 99 cents on eBay, even the widescreen special edition, so it's not expensive. There's a DVD that was released that has all four movies, so it has the first one, both sequels, and the remake, and that's on Amazon. Buy it now for $10. So if you want to get all these movies in one place, that's a good place to do it. I don't think any of them have any great special features or anything like that. But I looked around for collectibles. There are a lot of, I don't think we mentioned, but in the movie, they all had to get their uniforms, they had to get a sponsor, and they had to go around and get sponsors. So all the other teams have these great sponsors, and the Bears end up, their sponsor is Chico Bail Bonds, which is on the back of their things. So if you go on eBay, there are replica jerseys you can buy. In fact, the ones I saw went from kid sizes all the way up to a 5X. So no matter what size you wear, you can get a Chico Bail Bonds jersey. It says Bears on the front. So they have those. I also found, Tatum O'Neill recently did, I guess she was at some sort of movie convention thing and somebody had her signing baseballs. So,
wow.
So you could get Tatum O'Neill signed baseballs if you want.
Get Tatum O'Neill to sign your balls. Just
there you go. And have it on there.
Mm-hmm.
The coolest thing I found were these, they were released by Panini, which is a company that makes baseball cards, and they have a line of baseball cards called the Golden Age. And so every now and then they will do like throwback type baseball cards, and they released a series of baseball cards with the Bad News Bears on them. So they look like, you know, regular baseball collector cards, but it has, you know, all the kids, like it has, you know, Amanda Wurlitzer, pitcher, and they all have like a little spot on the front where they can autograph them. So I don't know if you like got autographed ones or you would have to go get them autographed or whatever, but I think there's like a special edition where there's six of them where people from the movie got together and autographed them and stuff. So there's a lot of those, and they're not expensive. But I thought that was kind of cool thing, you know, if you were really into this movie, especially if you were a baseball person.
Yeah,
that might be a cool collectible. So there's some stuff out there. I might show up next week with a Bears jersey on. That'd be kind of cool.
Or you could be wearing a bear jersey. Never mind, I'm out. I don't even know where I was
pick up
going.
I may pick up the movie on DVD. I quite enjoyed this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I did like it a lot. I really did. And Walter Matthau's in it. I mean, when you got Walter Matthau in anything, it's going to be a
the
classic.
Odd Couple. That is, it's a little further back, but I, to be honest, have contemplated, because this show is generally 70s and 80s. That's 60s. I don't even know. Let's just say 66, maybe 67, mm-hmm. something
yeah,
like
around
that.
There.
And since I've started this podcast, I always thought that's a movie that I'd like to do. I absolutely love that movie.
It's a good one to do. Lemon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll throw it even further back at one point and do the Odd Couple, but we'll take a vote on it before we do.
Okay.
But does Amanda's mom get a vote? We put three of us and then Amanda's mom, she could be the tiebreaker.
Well, I enjoyed it. You guys definitely enjoyed this one, huh?
Oh yeah.
Another benefit of doing Throwback Reviews podcast is getting to rewatch these movies. And I mean, this—I totally forgot about this movie up until a little while ago. I mean, it was kind of like, oh yeah, I saw it. Never thought twice about it. But I'm really glad. And this will definitely go on the shelf in the digital archives of movies that I'll pull out occasionally to watch. So.
My memory was, this is a movie about a bunch of kids that get together and form a team and then they win the game. I mean, that's what I really thought this movie was about kids playing baseball. Obviously a lot of it goes over your head as a kid. I didn't remember, that he was a baseball player. I didn't remember. And for some reason I thought Amanda was his daughter, you know, like his estranged daughter or something. I just had forgot so many details, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I'm saying I assumed that they won. That's my memory was that they ended up winning the big game.
Were you surprised at the end when they threw him out?
Yeah. I was very happy that they didn't win. It made it seem more realistic.
Yeah, but it's like a lot of these movies we always say each week that they're enjoyable on multiple levels. You know, kids, obviously, they're going to get the baseball-type stuff, the funny, you know, jokes and stuff like that out of it, whereas an adult, you know, there's this character arc of him growing up, you know, and not wanting to become like those competitive other coaches and stuff, and him seeing that really his role is not to be the winning coach. His role is to empower these kids. And to watch that, you know, so definitely. I enjoyed it on a different level, and I definitely it'll be in the rotation in the future.
Well, I like this movie, especially since this is the very first time I've ever seen it, and it was definitely unpredictable. That's what I liked about it. I did expect the team to win at the very end, and with them not winning, that was a nice breath of fresh air. It definitely wasn't what I expected, and the comedy aspect, the opening with a Budweiser can in the front seat and just from that point on, and then and the genius of Walter Matthau just playing another character that was unlike any of his other characters and owning the role very well, and the kids, they acted very well for the 70s, because you know, back in the day when they made films like that, they always turned out like after school specials and the kids couldn't act. And these kids pulled these roles off perfectly as if they were, you know, it was like a documentary instead of a movie. So it was a great movie to see for the first time at age 44.
And we mentioned Budweiser. Of course, Buttermaker, at one point, Tanner says, you know, all we got for a coach is a cruddy alky. So he's constantly drinking Budweiser. But I think my favorite, so there's a lot of product placement in this movie. Mm-hmm. I think at one point they all go to Pizza Hut, and we saw a Pizza Hut in the background. But my favorite one is when, I don't even remember where they were. I think they were, it was like after the game or whatever. And Engelberg, who's, like I said, is the, you know, he's the token fat kid on the team. And he's just got a bucket of KFC chicken. And he's holding it so you can see the logo, and he's eating fried chicken. And I thought, what a great product placement. I mean, because obviously you can see the logo and you can see what it is. But just that he would bring a whole bucket of chicken and stand there and eat it. I like that kid.
Why, watching women do ballet.
Right. Does that turn you on? I got a Harley Davidson.
Easy, I got a Harley. Yeah, I got a Harley. Does that turn you on? And that, and it looked as though she was contemplating it for a second there too.
There was, well, oh, I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say really quick, Shelley, my wife, worked in Pizza Hut back in the day when they served beer, and I noticed in this movie they had the Pizza Hut serving beer, and she always said they had Michelob and Bud on tap, and it was strange for me to see that. I've never witnessed that in my childhood.
Do they not do that anymore?
No, I don't think they do that at Pizza Hut.
Really? I worked at Pizza Hut, and we had beer, and I also worked at Mazio's. I worked at a lot of pizza places, and they all had beer.
Hmm.
And the best part about it was everything in the pizza industry, the fast food industry, is very closely monitored for your food stuff. So they would say, okay, you have this many pounds of cheese you use this week, I mean, down to the ounce, or this many pepperonis. But there was no way to really judge accurately how much beer had been in the tap. I mean, you just had a keg, you know, so...
Yeah, hey, what happened to you there?
Little for me, little for, bit more yeah. for me.
A little for table four, a little for Rob.
Oh, every now and then you can be like, oh, I totally spilled one, you know. And I will tell you this, at 16, 17, I was not above drinking some warm beer that was left out on a table.
Oh, yeah, I hear you.
Clean up table four.
I'll bust the
table.
I'll do it. Exactly. Well, what are you going to eat with somebody else's leftover pizza? You know,
you got somebody. You got to wash it down with there. Something, right?
Right.
Well, we're going to close this one up here, but I just want to say again, thanks to the Grants. This movie really reminded me of being a kid, of just playing wiffle ball, playing ball in the streets, and yeah, we used to. I mean, we were always playing. Something. He was definitely not a coach like these guys. He was a good guy. I remember him passing around a bag of Big League Chew down the line, great Big League Chew. And awesome. I also remember, and it was a completely different situation, where he told me, don't swing. Don't swing. They're going to walk you. Don't swing. They're going to walk you. They didn't end up striking me out. But, you know, I listened to him, and you know, he had a feeling that they were going to, he wasn't doing it like these guys, you know, trying to get me, you know, beaned or anything like that. So it just reminded me of some good childhood experiences. So I really enjoyed this movie. So thanks to the Grants for some memories. But Rob, that's what cool. Do you, you got any closing parting words?
You know, the only thing I would mention is that we recently added some more shows to the network. I think between, or since our last show, we added, Broken Token, which is another, arcade and pinball podcast. We added, I'm trying to think here. We added, Press Continue Podcast, which is a really good podcast. They're all really good podcasts, but that one's really, really good. That's my favorite child of all the childs now. But it's good. Who else has been? I've seen a bunch of new shows from the Toys R Us report. He's been cranking out shows. And then, of course, like you and Ferg bringing back OTR Playlist and all the other. So there's a ton of great shows. So if you haven't checked out throwbacknetwork.net, there's been some new shows added. So you might want to go. I always get it wrong. Who does the holiday?
Oh, that's Rick Reynolds. He
okay,
is from
Rick.
The.
Hey, if it's Rick, I say Paul. If it's Paul, I say Rick.
Yeah, you do that. Yeah, when we're talking.
I get them all. I know, but I do that every time. But
he's cranking them out too. The holiday special podcast.
Yeah,
I think so, he's got about 11 out at this point.
And it just started not too long ago, and now we've got, you know, Christmas around the corner and Thanksgiving. So if you're into holiday stuff like that, just a bunch of new shows being added, plus all the ones that Zurb, I think, all go into Zurb's. I mean, there's just one feed for all of Zurb's podcasts on the network. So if you go there and go look, and we're going to be adding the Rusted Metal one.
Rusted Metal.
So lots of good stuff showing up on the network.
Yeah, there's only a couple shows of his on the network, but he does have a lot of shows on his own, basically your own little network feed. So definitely check out Zurbinator Land.com, or is it Zurbinatorland.wordpress.com, something like that?
Nope. It's Zurbinator.
This is your turn. So Kevin, do you have any closing words?
Hey, yeah, you can find me at Zurbinator.wordpress.com.
Awesome.
And I do. I have two things I want to ask. Please, when you do your shopping, try going to the Throwback Reviews Amazon page. Also, you can go to the Throwback Network's Amazon page and do some shopping there, too. Christmas is coming up, and I know that you want to get some turkeys. And, you know, why go hunting when you can go to throwbackreviews.amazon.com and walk up to the turkey and shoot it right there in the store? You know, that's what's good.
A lot easier. Just click it and tick it.
And that's it. Yeah. And the other thing I was going to ask is, Rob, how's it going with that box of goods?
The box of goods, you know, I put a video on the website of all the things that I have added. If you haven't seen that video, you could go back to facebook.com/throwbackreviews podcast. You can scroll down and find that video. I may make another video. I may go around. I mean, it was like the reverse of a shopping spree. You know, like if you're in a toy store and you would just walk through and just grab things, it's like that. It's just me grabbing things in this room. You know what? The box is right here. Hold on.
He was Jeffrey the giraffe because he was walking around.
I'm just grabbing things.
Hey, Rob.
Yes, sir.
Can you just briefly explain what's going on? Because I'm not sure what show we actually even announced it on. I am a little backwards on releasing some shows. This is actually going to come out. We did Weird Science about a month and a half ago, and this is going to come out before that episode. So
here's the deal. We need some Facebook likes because our Facebook page, which is the best retro Facebook page on the planet, has all of us posting retro things, and you could come chat with us, and we post things. We talk about stuff all the time. You could come post things on there, but there's not enough likes on there, and I don't know why that is because I looked it up, and likes are free. They don't cost any money. You just go click. Just go click like on the stupid thing. So for the holidays, here's what we're doing. We need to get that page up to 200 likes. I think last time I checked, we're at like 120 likes, something like that. So if you go on there and click like, you are going to be entered to win the Throwback Reviews Box of Awesomeness, which is a box that is sitting here in my house, and every time I walk through this room, I just grab a random thing off of one of my shelves and I put it in the box. So you're going to, and some of it is like things that I found. Like I went shopping the other day. I got, what is it? I bought brand new DVDs. I got Vegas Vacation that's put in here. I got Smurfs to the Rescue. These are brand new DVDs that I bought. This is a vintage 80s California Raisin. You remember when they had those?
Yeah.
That's in the box. I wrote a article talking about Vision Streetwear about a year ago for The Retroist. And Vision Streetwear contacted me through Twitter and mailed me some t-shirts for giveaways. There's one left. There's a brand new Vision Streetwear shirt in the box. There's a Fisher Price Adventure People. You are going to want this, Sean, right here. It's an Adventure Price People guy. There's some retro magazines in here. There's boxed Atari games. There's some damn chipmunks.
Oh, we can't tell them everything. That's got to leave a little surprise to it.
Oh, that's the first layer.
You still have that Darth Vader, the special one in there?
Don't make up lies either.
No, there's all kinds of, yes, there's limited. I just put a gold bar in the box. And you know what the best thing about the box is? It's a priority shipping box. So I don't care about how heavy it gets. It's however much I could cram in the box.
Yeah.
until it's full, you know. So there's no telling. There will be surprises in the box. Here's the thing. You know what? I will put
the keys.
I'm just going to go out. I'm going to say this right now. I'll put a copy of my book in there. I'll autograph the book. You tell me who the winner is, and I'll sign it to you, and we'll write throwback reviews on it. I'll put a copy of the book. So this is what you have to do to enter. Go get all the money out of your wallet. Get your credit card. Get your check, book, whatever you have, and then set all that stuff aside because you don't need any of that. You got to go to the Facebook page and click like. That's all you got to do. It's ridiculously easy to win all this stuff.
And you know what I'm going to do, Rob? I'm going to send you one of the albums that I recorded and put up for $5, and I'm going to let you burn a copy of that and stick that in that box as well.
Well, we'll do it.
All right.
We'll put it in there.
There we go.
I'm going to send you a sock.
I got a sock.
Is it a puppet or just a...
just a sock. Well, you heard. You got to go. You got to like the page, and you're automatically entered. But
that's all you got to do. It's very simple. And we want to do it by. I want people to get this like a Christmas thing.
Yep.
So all you got to do go on the page, people. And here's the bad part, is I'll post something on my page that says, "Hey, don't forget, you got to go like this thing," and then people like that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you
okay,
like
that's
the
not
going
to get you entered. You got to like the Throwback Reviews page. I love it. Right, yeah, and that shares the post. That helps spread it. But to be entered, you got to like the throwback page.
Got to like that button.
There you go.
You know what, Sean?
Uh-oh, he's throwing more in the box.
I was cleaning the room today, and here are floppy disks for AOL, CompuServe, and Quantum Link. This is good. This will get you on if you got a 14.4 dial-up modem.
And it's
this is throwback stuff right here.
Yeah. That could be framed and put on the wall.
You know what? Listen to this.
Is that?
That was it going in the box.
Holy crap. Is that in the box, Rob?
It's in the box.
All right. And as you can tell by the sound of my voice, I am trying to wrap this one up. So if you want to win what's in the box, go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/throwbackreviewspodcast. So, gentlemen, I think we're going to be under the time marker, but I think we covered this one quite well. We covered the contest. So until next time, thanks for listening. If you'd like to contact the show, you can send us an email at feedback@throwbackreviews.com or leave us a message on our voicemail at 716-243-2709. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/throwbackreviewspodcast and Twitter @throwbackreview. And don't forget, we're also part of the Throwback Network. Go to throwbacknetwork.net to find more retro podcasts.